Yeah, and like I don't know how hard it is to just say after a half an hour, there's a time, it's a clock, you know time. It's a really good concept. You've learned it all your life. Like, just black a sound, you know? Hour. Butch actually was riding an audience member as a donkey.
Hi, this is Garrick Van Buren. Welcome back to another episode of the First Crack Podcast. This is episode 49, a conversation with Minneapolis improv troupe Five-Man Job. Yes, there are only three members. Since I got into podcasting and been digging around in that space, there seems to be a lot of commonalities in terms of how it captures the moment in the same way that improv can capture the moment and make a very strong connection with the listeners and audience. With that, I hope this will be one of many conversations with improv troupes and what they do and how they do it and how they make their audience entertained. As always, the First Crack Podcast is a Working Pathways production, and you can drop us email and comments and all those sorts of things, both at the website, firstcrackpodcast.com, and or firstcrack@gmail.com. All right, let's get started.
Hi, everyone. My name is Lauren Anderson. I'm part of Five Man Job, the newest member.
Yes, Lauren is spunky. My name is Butch Roy, one of the members of Five Man Job.
The founding member.
Yeah, one of those guys. Started improvising a few years back, and we put this thing together, and we perform long-form improv in Minneapolis.
I'm Dan Hetzel. I'm the Wiley member of the group, and I have been improvising. Yeah, the deadliest, Wiley-est member. I've been improvising for 5 years, and I think it shows. So,
man. I've been improvising for about 3-4 years now.
So, tell me about Five Man Job.
I'll start. I'll take the mic away from Lauren. We started in 2000, actually with an almost entirely different lineup. It was a group with myself, a man named Larry Pontius, who's now in Manhattan, and Nick Condon, who tours with National Children's Theater Company. And we started performing. We formed a group specifically to perform Harold. As a long form, and we got together, rehearsed every week for about a year, 13 months or so,
sure,
and before we ever got on stage, and then we hit the stage in 2001, and then quickly started changing membership, and now we've actually kind of stabilized now. I think this is the longest we've actually had the same lineup. We started sending threatening notes to Dan, taping things to his locker. There was a sign in the green room. He was a cast member at the Brave New Workshop at the time, and we put a sign on his mirror that said, Five Man Job wants you. And just ominous notes started popping up in the green room telling him that he had to join or else. And then I actually went to his boss and told him that we were looking to recruit him and that he should tell Dan if he actually didn't join the group, he wasn't going to be invited back to do the next show. Which I believe he actually did pass on, did he not? Excellent. So we used strong arm tactics to get Dan Hetzel into the group when we needed to. So yeah, that's the capsule history. You guys got something to add?
When I graduated college, I came and I started classes at the workshop right away, and Butch was my instructor at the Brave New Workshop, and then I got a phone call one day from Mr. Roy saying, "Are you gonna stay in town?" And I said, "Yeah." He's like, "Do you want to be in Five Man Job?" And I said, "Fuck yeah." And I was really excited about it because I've been a huge fan of Dan, like, and a huge fan of Butch, obviously. He's my instructor. So I was pretty honored to be asked to join. And then I've been with you guys ever since. Add some flavor to the group and some hoots.
By hoots, she means boobs, just in case nobody knows.
I started with the idea of three members in mind because Harold's typically a long form performed by 5-6 or more people. I was actually on a student team for a few years that performed with as many as 13 and as few as 9 people, and it seemed a lot more fun and energetic to just cut out all the extra stuff and just get together and do a trio. And I'd been watching a lot of Ferrari McSpeedy is a duo group, and smaller groups have been popping up here and there, and it really interested me the amount of energy that people had to put into it to perform the same structure with fewer people seemed to kind of multiply the output energy that the audience got back from it. The Herald is a classic like Chicago structure, Del Close and Second City sort of dinosaur structure. It is essentially, it's a cyclical form. It's three disparate storylines seen three times each. So it's, you know, scenes A, B, and C, and then those are all separated by some just random nonsense that's just kind of been referred to as the game. And then that just is used to sort of connect with your partners and then go back into scenes A, B, and C. So you see three stories, three times, total of about nine scenes, three plot lines, and by the end they usually converge into some horrific nonsense. But it's terrific, actually. It's my favorite form by far because it yields really, really out there sort of results, but yet it's very connected. So, and I think audiences dig it when it's fun for an audience to have structure that they can perceive. They can, you know, it starts coming around again. They start to pick up the pattern. So when things come back, we get the audience gets, you know, a little bonus for paying attention, which is nice. We used to do them in about 8 minutes. And we had to actually start reteaching ourselves to be a little more patient because we were sort of really pouring a lot of energy into doing it and really sort of firing away at it. And we'd do them in about 8 minutes. And then we realized that we can't actually make that into a show and allowed ourselves to really slow down and take some more time with the form and find some cooler things. Somebody?
Well, that also led to doing the Super Herald.
Right.
Which is a former, we call it a Super Herald, okay. Where it's just three heralds. We just needed we needed to fill like an hour of space. We were going around we were on the road. And so we decided to come up with this thing where we could do three heralds because that'd be pretty impressive. One herald's usually pretty impressive. If we could do three, we'd, you know, knock everybody on their asses and stuff. So, but it's actually pretty exhausting to do, you know, one's enough, but, you know, trying to do three in a whole hour, you end up like, it's really fun to do when it works, but your brain just ends up getting fried by the end of it.
It's hard to get them in an hour, actually. For a form that usually takes about 8 minutes to do, for some reason when we do three of them together, it usually ends up being about 50 minutes, and we start realizing we have to really push it because it's easy to slow down and really sort of work all these storylines together.
A typical patient herald, however, is it takes about 30 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, if you take time with each one of the beats. Joe Bill, one of the guys at Second City and the Annoyance, defined Five Man Job as spaz prov.
Twitch prov,
because I learned this from Butch, but to have that energy off of the back line, a lot of improvisers are very nonchalant even when they're on the back line. By back line, I mean you're on stage, but you're not necessarily involved in the scene. And when you're on that back line, it's the energy you're giving out is as important as it is if you're actually in the scene, because improv is very physical sport/art/entertainment, and if your body's not ready to rock, then you're in your head. A lot of times, like towards the second and third part of the Herald, all of us are in every scene.
So I think it's become sort of signature to what we do is that we're very, very, very energetic and aggressive about it. So if people do end up on the back line, they usually aren't there for very long. They'll end up out and then back in again, either cutting or adding. Or being called into the scene in some capacity. So it's very aggressive and energetic.
And if I can speak for when we're all three of us are inside a scene, like I'll never forget, Butch and I were the main people in the scene, and Dan provided the excellent atmosphere. And that was the best example of patience, I think, on stage that I've ever seen. Dan asked for a library book or a Harper's Bazaar. Harper's Bazaar. And he was a professor, and he was grading papers. it was wonderful, the background to it. It really set the scene for Butch and I to, like, go and do whatever we were going to do. And then when we came back to Dan with the actual Harper's Bazaar, it was the hugest audience payoff that...
5 minutes. I just had to sit there and grade papers for 5 minutes.
He was so into it, though. What are you giving? You were, like, actually reading these essays.
Yeah, I'm giving people this shit. Yeah.
No, it's great. I think we've all sort of found this equilibrium. Like, to run with that example, you know, Typically, you know, somebody provides really heavy character work. Somebody will be very environmental. Somebody is usually very physical, and those roles alternate. I mean, I think we found our strengths in the group as well. But in any given scene, there's, you know, somebody can just be free to be the background character and to add details and things like that, and we can still shift focus and split off. So, you know, Lauren and I can do the scene. I think I was the Harper's Bazaar in the scene. Lauren was a college student that was talking to a magazine, and then go back to the scene with Lauren and her professor listening to a talking magazine, and it just gets stranger from there.
Lauren was on acid. That's very important.
In a scene, not in real life.
Not in real life.
You're on acid.
Pardon me.
People that really influenced me, Ferrari McSpeedy, both of which moved from Illinois up here, do a fantastic duo show in which they play everybody. And I think that they really sort of set the bar for a lot of that character in a play, really, really opening yourself up to being everybody in the scene. So we can have just three actors playing a whole crowd of people and know that you can just jump around and trust that it's all going to be okay. And we've even started, I think that was sort of the moment for me when we realized we could even trade places and play each other, because we went full circle, and it was actually a complete accident where I jumped into the wrong person. But that's the beauty of it. You know, you can have those accidents, and, you know, it's, so you're not just limited to three people. You can have, you know, a crowd of six people walk in, and we'll figure it out.
Me, myself, I really enjoy playing characters. Like, I could sit on stage, I could play a bunch of characters, but I enjoy just sitting there and playing somebody for like 10 minutes sometimes. And, you know, we've done that sometimes too. We're like,
Dan is one of the most impervious character improvisers ever. Once he develops a character, you can do whatever you want and it's not going anywhere. He'll be, you know, a Kentucky bastard. No matter what you say, once he hits his strong characters, it's awesome. He's unshakable.
Yeah. Well, a Kentucky bastard is one. Like, he's just an old guy. It was actually something I ended up doing with one of the guys from Ferrari McSpeedy. We were just two old men sitting in front of a gas station, just crotchety-ass old men eating fried chicken, like, for 20 minutes. And we didn't talk for the first, like, 5 minutes. All we did was eat chicken. And it was one of, like, my favorite things I've ever done. I just sitting there eating chicken, and eventually we'll get around to talking. Well, you know, just something will happen. And, you know, that guy stuck with me. And tonight I did a rapper named Double Murder Arrested, which I really enjoyed. he's kind of angry, but sometimes I'll do a character once and I don't want to go back to it. But there's a couple, like Kentucky Bastard, and I'll definitely come back to Double Murder Arrested again. And like there, you know, sometimes some stick with me. Like, I think if I have a really good time playing them, and I'll come back and visit him again. But it's a voice I've been fucking around with, and then I just found myself doing it. So I was like, cool, let's just see what happens, you know. And I think the scene was like 10 minutes long, me and my this other group called Sir Laughs a Lot, and we just sat there like 10 minutes, and I was just this guy, foul mouth. I must have set the world record for saying motherfucker on that stage. I must have at least said it 117 times, you know. But I mean, that's just the way I play. Say urban characters. I really like to play characters like that. I don't know why. That strikes a chord with me. But would you guys say I do that a lot?
Yeah, but it's not the only thing.
Yeah, it's not the only thing I do. But like I haven't played one in a while, so it's kind of fun. I find it very easy to do. So sometimes when I'm, you know, in my head, I'll go do something like that to get me out of my head and free me up a little bit. And like, you know, yeah. And tonight was fun. Like, Double Murder Arrested. So, you know, I don't know. Anyway. I always joke around. I say I have three accents. I have urban, British, and Southern. Those are the three I always fall into. They're kind of always shades of gray in that. So sometimes I have to watch myself.
I'd say Butch is pretty witty. Like, he's kind of our wit master. I don't know. We're, you know, like, wouldn't you say, Dan?
Yeah.
He's the guy that in the group, I think, that turns a phrase quite a bit. He's usually pretty stationary. But I also think Butch excels at the physical work.
Spakers is amazing. Yeah.
I once saw Butch, and I tell this when I teach classes as well. I once saw Butch. Butch, Butch. He came out on stage as a paraplegic, took off a backpack, took out a bowl, packed the bowl, lit the bowl, and then zoomed his wheelchair around stage. Like all...
With the mouth. You know, one of those mouth ones.
All using a straw and just pretty much just his mouth. And I was in absolute awe. The audience was in stitches. And it everything was exact. Everything was perfect. We could see where everything was. And every time Butch enters the scene, he comes out with a very specific physical work or space work. Because it's a, I don't know, for the layman, I guess it's like mime. Because it's improv, it's instant. We don't have any props or anything like that. So you have to create your world around you and hope that the people you're playing with can pick up on it. And sometimes they name it what you think it is, and sometimes they name it something else. Like you're holding a rifle and somebody says it's a baseball bat, you go with the baseball bat because that's the first thing that's been said. The Brave New Workshop, where we're sitting right now as we're speaking, is the oldest satirical comedy theater in the country. So they've been around for a long time, back before improv was called improv, at least in Minneapolis. Chicago's certainly known for improv. They have such a great improv scene down there. So much support, so many fans. Here, way back when it started by Dudley Riggs, they called it instant theater, and it was a lot of just theater on the spot.
It came from Dudley was a vaudeville circus performer, actually, and they started doing trunk shows, inspired by old vaudeville trunk shows where they would take props and a suggestion and then make scenes. And then that's how it sort of splintered off into, and then Dudley Riggs landed here. So it started growing in this spot.
Now the Brave New Workshop primarily does sketch comedy shows on their main stage, but they always their roots are definitely in improv, and they have a Brave New Institute, which is all improvised, and where I was taught, where Butch was taught, where Dan was taught. All of us got our training here, and other places as well, but here mostly. In the last like 5 years or so, the improv scene in Minneapolis has just exploded, and
none of this was here like 5 years ago. Like, I mean, these kind of like improv go going huge and stuff.
And I want to attribute that a lot to Butch. Like, Butch had a brainchild a couple of years, 3 years back, saying I want to have an improv show. Once a week, $1, so anybody can come see it. I mean, you can find a dollar in your car, and just come check it out. Because I think mostly what Minneapolis is battling with at this point is every time we're like, hey, come see our improv show, we have to explain to our audience what improv is. And that's something like Chicago doesn't have to do anymore, because everybody knows Chicago and it's synonymous with improv. They're like, oh yeah, that's where Second City is, that's where Annoyance is, that's where
community down there that they don't need to do that, you know, like an improvising community.
And now improv, it's growing in Minneapolis. We have a bunch of good groups, and we're all going to festivals, and the more we get out there, and we're starting to generate a fan base, people that like improv. And the coolest part is fans that like improv like to watch improv and don't necessarily want to do it, because a lot of people that watch improv are people that want to do it someday. And now we're starting to get fans that just really enjoy watching it and like it for the art form that it is.
Yeah, and to that, I think, especially having done festivals over the year, Minneapolis is really unique in that we're not Chicago, we're not New York, and we've been to L.A. We're not a huge hiring base for this industry, because improv has had this huge crest lately nationwide for actors and, you know, whole TV shows that are improvised and things like that. But we're away from, you know, if you go to Chicago, there's, you know, Second City does 7 shows a week, completely sold out, everybody's improvising, but everybody knows, and people will line up around the block to audition to be at Second City, because they know if they're on stage at Second City, it's a stepping stone to Saturday Night Live, you know, out in LA, things like that. But I think the shows suffer because there's this absolutely undeniable sense that you're being watched, you're being scouted, and you're the spotlight is on you. Whereas here, I think we have the benefit of having a great school, having really, really well-versed teachers, but the people that get on stage to perform actually want to be where they are at that moment. They don't want to just be here until they can get hired to go somewhere else. They actually do want to be there improvising, and there's groups that have been around for, you know, 5 years, and they just love it, and I think it reads so much differently than a place like, you know, we went, you know, L.A., Chicago, we've done Chicago Improv Festival twice, and even at the festival where there is a huge hiring push, even for out-of-town groups, you can see the air sort of changes. But, yeah, Minneapolis has definitely exploded, and I think we've started to get even a more national attention from other improv communities, even if it is just among producers. But because, yeah, I mean, 5 years ago, there would be 2 or 3 improv shows a year because there was no place to put them. The Bryant Lake Bowl didn't understand what improv was. It didn't get marketed appropriately. The Brave New Workshop had their improv sets, but that's only 5 people out of 500 that are on stage. Comedy Sports, we have down. We have actually the national champions of comedy sports we have here in Minneapolis right down the street. And then Stevie Ray has been doing improv in the park forever. But, I mean, that's 3 stages, you know, 15, maybe 20 people out of 500 that get to get on stage and perform it. And there was nowhere, there's no outlet for it. And venues didn't understand it when you came to do a show and tried to pitch it and they didn't understand what it was. And you were just going to make it up and how you're going to charge money for it. And in a lot of ways, and we're still battling a lot of that. People still don't understand what it is. I'm still struggling with. I made a New Year's resolution that I would no longer use television as a reference to what it is. People always come and they're like, "Is it like Saturday Night Live? Is it like Whose Line Is It?" And I swore I wouldn't use TV references anymore because it's live theater, and I think we're starting to lose that sort of vocabulary to say like, no, it's interactive. It's not stand up. You're not going to get picked on, but it's not. It's not Drew Carey. We're just gonna take it, and it's gonna be cool, and you just have to come see it. And I think our audience is actually catching up a lot faster than, like a lot of, well, to go on a small tirade, our press is still years behind because we've got people now across the country because we've been sending groups out to do festival after festival that are starting to point to Minneapolis as this really, really growing place, this epicenter for really great improv, but we can't get attention in our own town because it's just we just lack the means to talk about it effectively to people, to communicate what it is. You know, every time you market an improv show, you almost have to put an explanation on every single postcard of come see improvised comedy, not stand up. We won't pick on you. It is good. It's not TV. You should get out of your house and go see it. But we're coming around. It's great. And there's now stages popping up for people to perform on. You know, we get enough people here at the Go-Go on Sunday nights that I think we've had new people every week. I mean, 140
tonight?
Yep. 140 on a hot summer night on a Sunday, which is absolutely the opposite of normal theater. I mean, we actually get a swell in attendance in the summer, which is the opposite of all theater. And Sunday nights is usually a dead night. And the last 2 years, we've probably been close to capacity or at capacity more often than not. Yeah. Now when we started out, we had, you know, 68 people in the audience the first night. And 65 of those people showed up 8 minutes before the show started. So for the first 30 minutes, the doors were open. We kind of hung our heads in shame. And there's 3 people in the audience. And we're like, God, we're going to. And we thought we were going to just make these people's nights miserable by forcing them to give 4 suggestions from 3 people and battering them with improv. But now, it is now to the point where if there's less than 100 people, it feels like a small house, and we have to stop and realize. I mean, even we've been in Chicago and places where there are huge improv audiences, and we'll only get, you know, 40, 50, 60 people. Then we have to remember, like, wow, we've actually built a really, really solid a base to come play in front of, which is great because now we can have new groups pop up and try experimental things. We've had people doing video improv and all this stuff, and they know that they can take it to a regular audience that has a really good experience with what improv is. So they have, now they have the means to, you know, really kind of take it in and digest it. And our audiences are extremely savvy to, you know, all these cool things that improvisers, you know, can, all these, you know, different variants of forms and all the stuff that we can put on stage, and they're very quick to pick it up. So it's become a really great place to be on stage. And I think we're turning out some of the best improv talent in the country, hands down.
It's not anything you'll see on TV. Nothing's being done that describes the improv scene in Minneapolis on TV right now. It's not sketch comedy. It's not stand-up. It's not even comedy sports, because it's something entirely different. And the only way to know it is to see it.
It makes people nervous because they don't know what it is and they don't know what it's going to be until they get there. But it's one of those things that I guarantee, I look people in the eye and I say, I guarantee you will like it. Absolutely. And I've never had somebody come back to me and say, no, I didn't have a good time. It's an absolute blast because the audience is right there with the performers. Everybody's just watching it happen and it's never going to happen again. And you're there for that one time. And it's so cool, and it does. It makes people nervous, and you have to just shake them by the shoulders and I'd say, I swear to you, it will be all right.
I'd say I can do this in my apartment to my cat, but it's more fun when people are there laughing. So you got to come fucking see this stuff. I mean, my cat laughs, but
your cat's a critic, though.
She's a big ass critic, and so I entertain her, but she's heard all of the jokes.
We are performing with Farm Expedi next. As part of the benefit show to send members of Farm Expedi and various and sundry and members of Five Man Job to Japan. So we're performing with Farm Expedi, my favorite group ever, to raise some cash to do that. We actually had a show that we were going to run, and they were running two benefit shows. We were going to run two shows, and we just decided to combine them because we're all great friends, and we have a very good time doing it. And then I think we are back at the Improv Go-Go just in time for Fringe. And that's our next stretch of shows. It's been a while since we performed outside of the Improv Go-Go, which has been our goal, actually, to get out of this thing, because it's very easy to get comfortable and only perform here, to get out and start pushing shows at the Bryant Lake Bowl and Huge and other venues.
We've also done festivals.
Yep, we've been around the country now. Last 2 years, we started sort of our festival tours, done Chicago twice, Atlanta, Miami, L.A., Iowa City. Fuck Iowa City. St. Louis. We'll never go back to St. Louis again. Our first visit there was unbelievable. It was great. It was super. Our shows went horribly awry, but the people were wonderful.
Which I'm not very good at it, so I tend to not like it. I don't like watching people, but it's more jokey and stuff, and so I'm usually not. I get just kind of caught up in it, and I kind of sink. So we didn't know we were going to be doing short form. We just thought we were going to be showing up and like after their show, just do a set of ours. And we showed up, and they're like, "No, you're competing against us in our show at 8 o'clock or 10 o'clock."
Yeah.
What
so you know? We were on stage from 7:30. We ended up on stage from 7:30 at night till about 1:30 in the morning, because we did a short form show that we didn't plan on doing. A long form set that we did plan on doing. Then we did a long form jam with their cast.
Yeah, it's a long night.
It was a really, really long night, and about half of it was stuff that we didn't know we were going to be doing. We didn't know how to do, because short form is more. I mean, it's almost a separate discipline. It's games. It's these sort of one off scenes. Everything has this quirk to it. There's a rule to whatever it is. Whether it's sit, stand, kneel is a great example. Somebody's always sitting, somebody's always standing, somebody's always kneeling. It's still a scene, but there's this, there's always an odd rule thrown in, as opposed to long form, which is just this sort of free form. You just do a scene, do a structure of scenes, and somehow they all come together, and it becomes this long narrative arc or something that brings it all together, where short form, there's no, or less, I guess, development of things like that. It's just about playing the game. So,
and the audience gets the gratification from watching the game be played either really well or what is that Schadenfreude watching the performers fail miserably and liking it, they forgot the alphabet, I recently got done doing a main stage show at the Brave New Workshop where we use elements of short form and long form, and they kind of mixed them together. We use the short form as a way to generate ideas for the second half of the show, which was entirely a long form set. So they can mix together, but like Butch said, like Dan said, short form is about the game and watching the game be played. You still want the characters, you still want all the scene work, all that good stuff, but it's primarily about the game. Then long form, you get to experiment more. You're still playing a game in a sense, but it's not about the game. The game is just something that adds to it.
But when we went to St. Louis, we did that. We did all right. like, the people were great, and we had a really good time hanging out. So we knew going back, we were going to go maybe back a year later. Butch sent them an email saying, like, we'd love you guys. It's great. Several emails. It's very stating very clearly, like, we don't want to compete with you against your thing. If that's really cool, we'd just like to show up and do our own thing afterwards, like you had us do last time. Several emails, and we show up. Sure enough, we got to play with them. And we're just like, no! You know, and we just tanked. Just completely tanked. And they let us graciously do a set. Actually, I played an urban guy in a thing, and it made the whole room uncomfortable. And I believe I told the guy I'd shoot him in the face if he kept. One of the hosts kept like demeaning what I was doing up there, and I got so mad at him. I think I yelled at him on the stage in front of everyone. You know, not like out of character, but in character. Just kind of like, you better not say that anymore and all that stuff. But it was a very funny moment for me. But they graciously let us do a long form set afterwards. And for some reason, sometimes when you tell people. We'd like you to black us out, like, you know, stop, you know, black out the set after about a half an hour. Just look for a funny line, look for something, just black us out after a half an hour. People don't hear that, and they will just let us go for an hour plus. Yeah, and, like, I don't know how hard it is to just say after a half an hour, there's a time, it's a clock, you know time. It's a really good concept. You've learned it all your life. Like, just black us out, you know. Hour. Butch actually was riding an audience member as a donkey up and down the aisle. I mean, we just were like, we didn't know what else to do. Like, black us out. You know?
You can't get any more ridiculous than that. The show wasn't going to get any. It had been pushed as far as it was going to go. The night was over. They just didn't let us stop.
Yeah, I think we were in Chicago for the Chicago Improv Festival, which is fantastic. Spent all night, like, kind of, we could have been hanging out in Chicago having a good time, and we drove to St. Louis, literally got there in time for the show. We're informed we had to do that. Did this horrible show, did our horrible long form set. We literally just got back in the car, like, 10 minutes after, right back in turn, right back in Freeman, drove all night back to Chicago, just hanging our heads.
Hey, folks, I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Five Man Job. Thank you to Butch, Lauren, and Dan. I had a good time. And hope to catch another one of your shows real soon. If you want to find out more about Five Man Job, they're at fivemanjob.com. And Brave New Workshop is at bravenewworkshop.com. That'll do it for me, Garrick Van Buren. We're going to wrap up this episode 49 of the First Crack Podcast. Thanks for listening. And thanks for choosing podcasting.